I fear we're in the post-lunch doldrums here. I mean, that was pretty exciting. I mean, if you've ever looked up any information ever in a BIF guidelines, you have to be excited about Wiki, because now you can go online and keyword search and do all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think it's actually, I said it during our board meeting, I think it's probably go down as maybe the most significantly positive thing that happened during my tenure as president of BIF. And honestly, I was kind of lukewarm on the idea because I raised the exact question that you did, Don. I said, gee whiz, you know, how are we going to control the access to that thing? But the reality is we've got really good editors working on that, and if there is a conflict on that stuff, it comes to the board and gets decided just as the board has functioned in the past to adjudicate or kind of arrive at standards, because that's what BIF is good at. We bring together all the consensus to put together a standard that we can all agree on, and that's what it's about. I think I'm there. Thank you, Mark. Well, pleasure to be here. I didn't really expect to be on the program till Mark called me up and said, we'd like you to speak. And then when he said I could repeat a talk I gave in December, then, of course, that was a no-brainer, right? Because that's pretty easy. You just go in and grab it, right? And so you're going to get that. This is a talk I gave to the Genetic Prediction Workshop, which is a meeting that BIF organizes amongst mostly the scientists that calculate genetic prediction. Let's just a show of hands. How many of you were at that meeting in December? Oh, my goodness, a lot of you. Oh, you're going to be disappointed to see this again. That's okay. It's for everybody that wasn't there. How about everybody's hand who wasn't there? Oh, much more. That's better. Okay, now I feel better. Okay. So, and there is there's actually about 10 new slides in here. So, obviously, if you don't know our perspective, we come with a very, very distinct bias. We believe in index-based selection, right? I mean, that's kind of the philosophy of our company, and that's the philosophy of our breeding program. And so everything I'm going to say today has to do with selection indexes. We believe firmly that's the way forward. And our bias is that we don't use them well enough, okay? That's the bias for today's discussion. So, you know, I love to show this slide. Actually, if you know Ian Hamilton, who works for GrowSafe, he's the CEO of GrowSafe now. This is Ian's slide. This was from Ross Chicken Genetics. He put this together, the 1957 line that was their control flock, and compared them to 2001 genetics. And the interesting thing is the birds on the bottom ate about the same dry matter intake per day as the birds on the top. So if you think about that, that's pretty cool, right? I mean, we all, in the cattle industry, we like to increase growth and output. We probably have a bias towards increasing intake to make that happen. In their case, they didn't increase intake, but obviously dramatically increased output. So we know that works, and we know we can do that with a selection index. We run three indexes on the cattle we market and select. We want a profit, birth through weaning, and I'll talk a little more about that in a minute, but fertility, milk growth, cow feed intake, and heterosis. We run a post-weaning, which is very similar to many of the terminal indexes that exist in the breed, and it focuses on feed conversion, carcass value, and carcass weight, and then we run a combined index that put the two together. And we do express those in different terms. The dollar ranch index is expressed in dollars per cow. The feeder index is dollars per feeder calf. And the overall profit is primarily focused on the bull side. So it's calculated across 100 offspring for that bull. So it's designed to give you the relative profit differential over the lifetime of that bull. And that seems to have appealed to our commercial constituents that buy those cattle. We do share a lot of data. We've got a multi-breed database, about 1,166,000 animals in it right now. We're getting in about 35,000, 36,000 records a year now. We do data transfer through CowSense. We're running weekly EPD solutions and indexes. We're working with Zoetis to come out with genomically enhanced EPDs, which are right around the corner. We do a lot of consulting on data collection and selection strategies within the group. It's maybe not the biggest database, but it's one of the best databases, we think. A high percentage of that data is what I would call good or best data, which we like. And we've got a uniquely heterogeneous breed composition within there. We've got lots of purebreds,
and lots of crossbreds. Literally several hundred thousand Angus, nearly 100,000 red Angus, tens of thousands of Simmentals and Gelbys and Charolais as well within that database as purebreds, and then lots and lots of hybrids. Nothing real unique about the traits, I don't think. Obviously, lots of dry matter intake. I think we're at 29,650 individual feed intake records now. We've got cow size on tens of thousands of cows on mature weight. We've got a lot of pulmonary artery pressure data because we're in Colorado, and that's important for us. We're udder scoring, and we're starting to analyze animal health data. And we'll have EPDs on all of those. We have a number of breeders that contribute to that database from the different breeds, and most of those breeders are collecting individual feed efficiency data, and that's coming in on a weekly basis. From that data, we calculate these indexes through a simulation model, and you can see what's going on trend-wise. The indexes are at the far end, and we primarily select for the overall index. And you can see how that value went from 2005 from a value of 7,000 up to our current value in 2019 of 18,000. And you see what happened to the traits. So you see what's going on with the model and the way we're selecting. Birth weight's falling. Growth rate's going up, not as rapidly as it is in most of our breed populations, particularly in the Angus population. Our days to conception, EPD, which is a fertility proxy, is staying stagnant. Our cow weight is going down. Our feed intake is dropping fairly significantly. Feed to gain, which is a prediction of feed conversion, so negative is better, is improving. Marbling's going up. Our ribeye seems to have kind of peaked out at about 0.77. These are all EPDs that are expressed on an Angus base. Our model keeps our back fat fairly constant because we don't want to lose the fleshing ability of that cow on the maternal side. And you can see what's happening to the percent Angus within that population. And so it's dropping significantly over that time period. So that's pretty cool that we can make that quantitative change and simultaneously decrease the Angus percentage. The model does include a prediction for heterosis. Okay, so part of the gain in the profitability in both the ranch number and the profit number is coming from that reduction in heterosis. And the model assumes we're going to mate to a three-quarter Angus, quarter Simmental cow. Okay. So that if you have any breed that has no Angus and no Simmental, so if you're a Gelvy bull, you get 100% heterosis, and that goes into your numbers. So that's kind of how the system works and just gives you an idea of which way that selection pressure is being based. That's our genetic trend on the ranch number. It's about $2. The genetic trend is about $2 per cow per year. When we see that out in the commercial herd, we're having some significant impacts on those commercial herds in terms of pounds weaned per cow exposed. Cow size is going down in all these herds. Weaning weight's going up. Stability's going up. And fertility's going up. And we like those trends. We would be concerned if cow size wasn't going down, and we'll come back to that. That's the trend on the dollar profit index. I like to show this because I like to say, gee, I came into the organization in 1988, and so Bruce, you know, until I got to CSU in the early 90s, where's Bruce? Did Bruce sneak out? Until I got to Colorado State in the early 90s, our genetic trend on profit was flat, and then look what happened. But it does make a difference if you select for it, and we really weren't selecting for this trait until about 2009. What happened between 1994 and 2009 was really that we put a lid on mature weight, and we were selecting for increased carcass merit. And that's what our internal selection index was prior to that. So when we look at it in the real world, we're able to do, I think this is kind of an interesting database, and it kind of goes back to that chicken slide. Here's 700 steers from a rancher whose bulls used to average 8,000 and then went up to 10,000, comparing 2008 calves to 2012 calves. In weight was about the same. Average daily gain improved. Feed intake in terms of dry matter went down. Feed conversion improved. Ribeye went up. Percent CAB went up. And carcass weight went up. So basically in a four-year period on the same market cost, same market price and cost inputs, we changed those cattle about $122 a head. And interestingly, didn't just change growth, right? We actually decreased the feed intake and got more carcass weight at the same time. So again, talks about what the directional change is. So how do we compare to the industry average industry bull? We ran these figures. This would be a new slide. Our average bull in 19 was 18,000. The top Angus herd that we analyzed, because we do take Angus herds that we're interested in and we run their figures through our system, comes out higher than our herd average, which shouldn't be surprising, right? We're primarily selecting for composites. Angus population is the biggest population out there. Somebody should be able to really line up those traits, and they did, and they come out very high, but their dollar ranch number wasn't as good, and we'll talk about that. The reason I put this up was just to try to highlight the importance of these indexes. The breed average animal ranks that way on our index, and all other breeds, as we can estimate them. Sorry. What we do is take the average EPDs of those breeds, run them through the indexes, and average them in, and they come out at about those figures. Not surprising that because we're calculating heterosis, the other breeds would come in pretty decent on Dollar Ranch. In particular, the Hereford breed comes out exceptional on Dollar Ranch, beats all the other breeds, which we would expect, right? We would expect to cross a Hereford on an Angus Simmental cow and generate a lot of hybrid vigor and have a really high Dollar Ranch from birth to weaning. What this shows, and I think this is the point of the talk, and I left it in there for a reason, we are, within the industry, creating huge differences in profitability during any stage that we want to measure. Less so during the cow-calf stage, because that's the hardest stage, right? Those traits are the least heritable, the hardest traits to impact. But still, significant differences here. I mean, if you've got this herd and this herd, you know, you're separated by over $40 per cow per year, which is a pretty significant amount of money for most of our commercial producers. And then obviously on the terminal side of things, I don't have the terminal index up here, but this Angus herd would be the high terminal breed or terminal index of all three of these. So we'd expect those calves to do the best from weaning through to slaughter. But you can see where the averages are. And I think this bodes, has particular significance to anybody that's not raising Angus. Okay? Because the Angus population is so large that you can make enormous genetic trend, and you could be where this top herd is. You could reposition that and select for higher dollar ranch and maybe give up a little bit on the terminal side, but you could get way above this average, okay? The other breeds, that's what I worry about. I worry about how far you can get ahead, and I worry about how fast you're moving, and I worry about how fast the rest of the industry is moving. And I think as we get to a point where these things, because of information transfer, because of more transparency within the value chain, these differences are going to become more and more important. And I think if you're not measuring them and not selecting them, then I think it's really critical. And so my message to the scientists is this is important to invest in helping people understand these and build the best model. My message to breeders is you need to be paying attention to this. My message to associations is if you're not doing this, perhaps you're not going to be competitive 10 years from now. And we need only look at the dairy breeds to see how that happened. There are lots of dairy breeds out there. There's really only a couple of them that are competitive today. And it happened because this genetic selection in a couple of the breeds was much faster than in the other breeds. So everybody asked me how our index is compared to Angus, and so I did a little bit of analysis on this a couple days ago. The new Dollar M, the maternal index for Angus, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, it's a index that is focused on pre-weaning traits, would include calving ease direct, calving ease maternal, docility, foot structure, milk production, weaning growth, cow feed intake, and those traits pre-weaning. When we compare that to our Dollar Ranch number, there's only about a 30% correlation, which is not unexpected to me. The Dollar M number has, like I said, calving ease direct and maternal and docility and hoof structure in it. Those are traits that are not heavily emphasized in our Dollar Ranch number, and so you'd expect differences there. Our number's putting significantly more downward pressure on cow weight and frame and more downward pressure on dry matter intake. And I think this is sort of a question that we have to ask with our indexes. Are we primarily concerned with output per head, or are we primarily concerned with productivity per acre? Because we're going to get very different answers depending on how we answer that question. Our model is very specific that we want to increase productivity per acre. If we want to increase productivity per acre, then stocking rate becomes a driver, reducing dry matter intake, reducing the total amount of feed the cow eats so we can stock more cows on the same acreage to change that throughput, as John Maddox and Trey Patterson talked about today, becomes critical. When we look at dollar B versus dollar feeder, high correlation, they're pretty well lined up. The new dollar B puts relatively less emphasis on growth than it used to and relatively more emphasis on marbling than it used to and lines up closer with our dollar feeder number. Probably the biggest difference there is we still have a higher kind of red meat yield premium in our dollar feeder than dollar beef does, but basically those correlate pretty well. Now, when you put your combined index together, because the terminal part of the index tends to trump the maternal part of the index, in any model you build, that's the case, because 70 or 80% of your progeny are going to go to harvest, okay? And a relatively small amount of the progeny of a bull are actually going to be retained as females. And, of course, their impact within your financial model has to be discounted into the future. But when I compare those two models, the dollar combined, which is basically dollar maternal plus dollar beef times 1.297, I think, is the answer. Basically, they correlate pretty well because of the terminal component, obviously not because of the maternal component. Dollar C has relatively more emphasis still on growth. Our overall dollar profit index seeks a little more marbling, but seeks significantly less intake and less mature weight. And so I put these up because here we are kind of all looking at the same underlying financial model, coming up with very different answers, right? To me, those are very different answers, because if I sort the database and try to decide which are the 10 animals on the top, the 10 sires on the top that I'm going to use, I get very different answers with those different indexes, and I'll show you some of that. Just as a kind of a side note, because people ask about what happens with fertility, as we've increased that dollar ranch trend, this is our trend on stayability. So stayability is going up significantly as we select for this downward pressure cow weight frame days to conception EPD, which is interesting. We do still find outliers within the Angus breed, like this female. She's 27,000 on the index. All the red circles are basically top 5% or better on all those traits. Those animals that excel on all those indexes. That shouldn't surprise us, right? If you have an animal that's the best animal on almost all the traits, it's going to be the best animal on almost all the indexes, because how could it not be? Because the indexes use the traits to drive it. And so this would be the number 9 combined index cow in the Angus breed as of right now, and she's the number 1 cow in our system on profit. And so at the extremes, they do line up. So it comes back to this steering question. And I liken this, and I think this was, people said, you're going to present anything fun or funny. This is the only part that I even get close to fun or funny today. I think we have awesome EPDs. I think that, you know, these models we have today are way better than any models we've ever had before. I know that there are a lot of breeders that like to take shots at these EPDs. They're probably not in the room today, right? I mean, we're probably a group that as a whole tends to believe in the EPDs way more than average, okay? But we argue about whether they're more accurate or less accurate. I think it's kind of like talking about hunting rifles. You can buy this Remington 700, or you can buy this Tekka T3. You know, those guns cost a lot. They're both very accurate, okay? They're both very accurate at delivering the bullet to the target if you're anywhere handy at all at shooting. But you still have to know how to hunt. And we're not good at hunting, right? Here's this guy that was going for an 8-point buck, and it was a doe. So he was sad. This woman was even sadder because she thought this bull, she shot this elk thinking it was a very large white-tailed buck, which is bad. But this guy shot his neighbor's truck thinking it was a deer, and I say to people, it is that bad, okay? It is that bad in selection today, okay? We have EPDs and indexes that breeders are using, and they don't even know if it's a truck or a deer, okay? It's that far off, and that, if we think about it, it's really one of the sort of existential threats to us as an industry. because our competitiveness, I don't think that kind of stuff happens in chickens and pigs, okay? I think they're paying a little closer attention. I think the decisions are being made by far fewer people. I think the people making the decisions well understand their indexes. Do they have accidents occasionally? Do they have unintended consequences? Sure they do. Sure they do. Are they as many and as grave as we have in our industry? I don't think anywhere near. And I'm really worried about where we're going and where these indexes are taking us. And I don't think these selection criteria are arbitrary. I had a really sharp kid from CSU come in and interview for a job a few months ago. And he said, what I love about the beef industry is you can drive around the country and you can find people selecting for all kinds of things. And I thought that he's absolutely right, right? I mean that is sort of a great thing about the industry. But if there is an underlying profit function, and if these traits do drive profit in the same direction, then our answers as to what's right and wrong should be more similar than they are different. And I think that's a problem today. When I give these talks all over the world, I talk about what drives cow-calf profitability. Obviously, it's output. We want the calf to weigh more and be worth more. Reproduction, everybody gets reproduction. We want it easier calving, so we have more live calves. We want her to breed at 15 months. We want her to breed back earlier. We want her to last in the herd for a long time, and we'd like her to eat less. But I would say that virtually none of the indexes that are commonly used globally for the selection of beef cattle accomplish that list of traits. Virtually none. And I'd say even in this country, you're hard-pressed to find indexes that will take that function and maximize it. Okay? We're still trying to make that cow be everything to everybody. We're not trying to maximize that maternal function. Our customers, the cow-calf producers, their profitability is driven by that function. We had those guys up here on the panel today, and I don't know who lined up those guys. I wasn't really involved in that process, but that was a good group of producers. If you ask them if that's their function, they're all going to agree. And if you ask them, do they want their cows to be bigger 10 years from now and eat more 10 years from now than they eat today, they're going to say no. And yet we have a whole bunch of indexes designed to do exactly that. We know that cow weight creates biological inefficiency. We know that we want to push that downwards if we want to optimize productivity per acre. We know in the feedlot what the drivers are, right? We'd have the feed conversion, grid value, carcass weight, and health. Those are the drivers. We've got really good predictions for all but health, and I would expect that health will come screaming around the corner in the near future because it's a major issue in the industry today. So as we think about these indexes, does the weighting matter, or does the, as we call it, economically relevant traits, ERTs, does that inclusion matter? And I did a little analysis of several of the indexes we design internally just to show you what happens as we change the weighting versus changing which traits are included in the model. So we run that dollar profit here in the United States, and if I sort my 7,000 sires in my database and I pick the top 50 bulls, that's their EPD profile, okay, on an Angus base. And so then we have the similar trait model with radically different cost and market assumptions for the UK. Okay, so what we're looking at here is the same traits, but radically different weightings, right? Totally different cost structure, virtually no premium on marbling on the index on the bottom, a total difference in optimal carcass weight, a totally different carcass premium system, all those things very different. And when we run those top 50 sires, the EPD profile of the top 50 on this index and the U.S. index comes out remarkably similar. Remarkably similar, okay? Which is an argument that getting the weights, the economic weights on these traits exact is really not the critical issue, okay? But now let's look. If we drop out these traits, and so we go to the ranch index, which ignores all the post-weaning. Look at how radically different the top 50 bulls look on that index versus these two birth-to-harvest indexes, right? Dramatically less growth, dramatically higher back fat, much less emphasis on carcass traits, much lower red meat yield, significantly lower feed intake, again, based on a model that's trying to increase profitability per acre, and much less mature weight and carcass weight. And then we look at the terminal index, and of course it flip-flops the other way, exactly what we would expect. We get much more growth, much less calving ease, we get much more carcass merit, much higher retail yield, we accept more feed intake to get the increased carcass weight output. So as we change which traits are included, we get radical re-ranking, which to me speaks to really two things. One is to not to worry too much about getting the financial weights exactly correct, but secondly, to make sure that everything you want to select for, everything that's economically relevant during that stage of production needs to be in the model. Because if you leave it out, you're going to have problems, okay? And so I know there are breeds that decide, well, we're a specialist at this, so we don't have to worry about that. Well, if that matters financially, and you don't put it in, you're going to get the wrong sort. Because of the antagonisms, you're going to move the wrong way. Now, here's what's really interesting. So I ran sorting the top 50 bulls with these four different indexes. I said, what was the average ranch, which is the maternal index, the average feeder, and the average profit of each of those? And, of course, what we see is about what we expected. The dollar profit, which is the U.S. financial model, birth to harvest, gives a very similar solution to the UK profit model, birth to harvest. A little more emphasis maternally there because they don't get the upside from that carcass value, that merit that we get in this country, particularly from the high marbling, right? So it comes out about like we'd think. But then when we select for this maternal model, look what happens to the ranch. It spikes way up, but look what happens to the terminal index. We get clobbered. We get clobbered on the terminal value of those animals selected on the maternal side. And the same thing happens when we select on the feeder index. We clobber the maternal side. And so it really makes an argument for making sure that you use an overall index, or you specialize and inform breeders very clearly that this is a terminal index and this is a maternal index. And I don't think we even have enough modeling as a industry today to tell us whether if we went this way with a terminal and maternal, whether we're ahead of going the overall way. I understand the specialization, but the question really comes back to how many resources and how many breeders and how big of a population is going to be selected on each of those indexes. Because if we have a huge population selecting overall from birth to harvest, and we have a relatively small number of breeders doing a maternal-terminal cross, my argument would be probably that the overall index is going to win. You're going to find better cattle in that large population selected on that overall index than you're going to make specializing using the ranch and the feeder. So I think it all matters. We can talk a lot about indexes and models, linear, quadratic, or simulated. How do you fit your optimums? A big critique I have of most of the indexes we have today is that we assume that those traits should be selected until infinity and never reach an optimum. That's strange to me because that's not what we see out in the field. Historical financial weights versus expected future weights. I think future weights are better. I understand they're harder to arrive, especially if you're a breed association. I think you have to model heterosis. It's a huge financial effect. What's the appropriate discount rate? That's a big question because we're building cow herds. And I think if we listened carefully to what the guys said today on the commercial panel and you asked them how much long-term maternal function would you sacrifice for growth tomorrow? I think they would say next to none. I think three of our four panelists would say next to none. So it argues that the discount rate should be almost zero. Do we discount this post-weaning profit because of the likely inability to be paid 100% of that at weaning today? Most of our producers are going to sell their calves and not get paid for that post-weaning value. So how much should we weight that in the index today? How do we treat the economically relevant traits that are currently not monetized or are poorly monetized in the marketplace? And I tell you, the one that I'm really worried about right now is red meat yield. Okay, I think if I study what happened in other species, they've made enormous progress on red meat yield. And in beef cattle, we've probably gone backwards on red meat yield over the last 40 years. If we think about the population of cattle that we harvested here in the United States in the late 1970s when those continental genetics were coming in and we were making lots of F1 continental animals, they probably had more red meat yield than our average animal does today. And that's really, it hurts us as an industry. Now, not at the expense of eating quality. I'm a big proponent of eating quality, but we still need to pay attention to red meat yield. And, you know, what happens if you ignore the financial realities on traits that you don't deem to be important? That idea that if you leave something out, even knowingly, but if you leave it out and it has real financial impact, it's going to skew the animals and you're going to pick the wrong animals. So you got to think about where your index is going to take us. Most indexes have taken us to the scene of the accident, and they take us there fairly quickly. And thus my title, Would You Drive a Race Car Without Steering? I don't think that's a good idea. The reality that we have is that most of our producers don't understand the indexes. Most of the animal breeders do not understand the cattle, and so that's a limitation. Once started, the breed associations don't like to adjust their indexes, and we really devote less intellectual capital and financial resources to index development than to anything else we do in beef cattle. And I know that there's I don't know if you guys want to talk about your funding project at all. You guys have... Matt's going to talk about it. Oh, awesome. That's right. He's next. He can talk about that. So there are some initiatives to provide decision support. That's really what we're talking about, right? The decision support, in the simplest terms, is what we're selecting for the best thing we should be selecting. And are there specific optimums for different operations and those sorts of questions? But at the global level, I think we're throwing way too few resources at this. And I would urge you to think about that, think about how you can change that in your operation, how you can change that in your breed association, how you can change that in the industry as a whole, because I do think that by selecting for suboptimal indexes, we are hurting ourselves significantly. And I only have to look to some of these other countries where they've chased growth and lean yield. My favorite example is the United Kingdom. I mean, we all can laugh at them and say, you know, that's not a significant beef cattle industry. But, you know, those people are pretty good husbandry people. They're with their cattle just like we are. The herds tend to be smaller, so they tend to have a lot more contact with the animals. But they put a grading system in place and selection indexes that basically selected the cattle to be large terminal cross, heavy-muscled, lean animals. And it had a tremendous detrimental effect to maternal function and overall efficiency. And they did that for about 20 years before they really figured out they were going the wrong way. And I would suggest to us right now that if we really read the tea leaves, any of these indexes that tell us that we want cattle to be significantly bigger than they are today are not really paying attention to the tea leaves. When we come down to figuring out carbon footprint, the cattle that are going to win on carbon footprint are the systems where a small cow produces a high carcass weight. That will be the best carbon footprint because it's all driven by feed intake proportionate to methane production. We're going to get judged based on the efficiency of that output. How much beef can we produce per unit of methane? And I would say today that a big beef cow loses that. A small beef cow beats a big beef cow, and the scary take home is a dairy cow bred to produce a beef animal and also milk probably has a smaller carbon footprint than our beef animals do. Okay? So this is pretty important. We see major retailers thinking about that, thinking about branding their product based on sustainability. The entire Walmart push right now to have regional development of natural Angus is part of that. It's a carbon footprint play. They want to have the local product sold and raised and fattened and harvested and delivered locally. All that's playing into that, and so we've got to pay attention to that. And I think as an industry, as a group of people that's very focused on the seed stock side of our industry, if we lose sight of that, we're really headed towards this crash because I think there'll be a reckoning that we're not going to like. Because I see the day when our herds and our genetics and our supply systems are rated on those kind of metrics, and those populations that are going the wrong way will find themselves way out of favor very quickly. And there won't be enough time to adjust. We need to be thinking about it today. We need to be changing our selection decisions and selecting in the right direction. So That's I told Mike I put a nice quote in here. Breed associations seem ill-equipped to educate their members about indexes. That's a real problem, because if breed associations seem ill-equipped, I don't know who's going to do it. But I would tell you today that if you're using an index and you don't fully understand it, you need to have a loud voice towards your breed association, because they need to get the right people in there to help you understand what it's doing. It's really important. So where does the money go? To genetic prediction R&D or extension or decision support? I'm a big advocate of decision support. So I'd be happy to take questions now, but that's as good a lead-in as I can give you, Matt. That's as good a lead-in as I can give you for decision support. So questions? Post-lunch lull. Very good. Yes, Don.
If I understand right, under ranch profit index or dollar ranch, you don't include calves or docility in there?
No, yeah, docility is not in there, okay? It's not in there. The calves is in there, but we don't assume we're going to breed first calf heifers with the bulls. We assume they're going to breed cows, okay? And so if at that level, there's a pretty wide spectrum of birth weight that's acceptable. It ends up driving birth weight way down because of the mature weight pressure. So if we tacked on a calving ease on top of that, it would go too far that way, if that makes sense. But what we tell people is the index doesn't answer whether you should use the bull on heifers or cows, but it assumes you're not going to have much calving difficulty, because within reason, we don't really think we experience a significant amount of dystocia on cows till well above the average birth weight found anywhere in the populations right now. So birth weight gets dragged along as a trait that is correlated heavily to mature weight, but it's not directly in the index.
Okay.